welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. And in the second hour of today's show, it's my great pleasure and honour to have as my guest for the full hour, Chris Emery, who of course is a producer on this show, but he's also a filmmaker and has done some amazing work recently promoting his film A Noble Lie around the country with speaking engagements and screenings of the film at major cinemas. It really has been quite an incredible whirlwind, I think, that you've been through. Chris, welcome back to Truth News Radio.
Hey, thank you. Harold, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, picking you up fine. You're a little faint, but I'm picking you up fine.
Okay, I'm gonna turn the volume up here. How's that, a little better?
Oh, that's a lot better, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's great to be back on. I was just kind of reminiscing on the way over to the studio tonight before we started your show. Almost 2 years ago to the week, you granted me the first interview on Truth News Radio Australia when I was living in Sydney.
Yeah.
And it was, went back and just listened to the archive just to kind of pick up some of the talking points we covered.
Yeah, and of course,
and it was time flies. I can't believe it. 2 years.
2 years. It's gone quick, hasn't it? Yeah. And that was not long after that I made my trip over to the US. And of course, we've been doing.
That was great. Giving you the tour of Dallas and Oklahoma City and Austin, and you got the chance to meet Deborah and her husband, and spent a few days down there. So
yeah,
then we went on to New York and then to Germany. You did the world, the Trans World Tour.
I did a whirlwind tour of my own. Yeah, I didn't really get a chance to do much because I had to get back to work. I was working in a pretty full on job at that time. Currently, I've got more time, and I'd love to get back over there and spend a bit of time. I've had some feedback from a few listeners in the US. We don't get a lot of call-ins to the show, but I've had some really good feedback. And one of our listeners actually in the US said that he thought it was the most intellectually top-rate show that he'd listened to in the US.
Well, I second that. It's amazing the level of and the quality of the news that you bring. It's great when if you play an archive once in a while due to your schedule, and I guess you are out of country right now, but to listen to the archives as I'm driving around Oklahoma City, and it sounds like you're in studio here. It's amazing with technology. So
yeah,
but you bring a whole fresh perspective to. It's like a third party view of our politics from halfway around the globe, and then we get to see the similarities and the contrast and comparison to your political theater that you have to deal with in Australia. And you know, really, there isn't a lot of difference. It's just the names and the locations are different, but it's the same old machinations going on.
Well, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
Go
and,
ahead.
And as you've seen in the last hour, the topics I've been discussing, electricity, smart meters, government corporate intervention in people's personal private decision making, that horrific story about the tasering death there, and again, that's just another example of this kind of overarching way that people's lives are being interfered with and sometimes terminated by measures which are advocated to us as being for the public good, for public safety. I don't know if you caught any of that in the last segment, Chris, there, but they were playing an interview and one of the policemen was saying that these tasers are terrific because they de-escalate. He was saying they de-escalate. Well, the reason they de-escalate is people are terrified. I mean, the only reason that is a de-escalation is because the taser is a type of gun. It's a weapon. It can kill you. So when the police puts their hand on their taser or, you know, unholsters it, you're terrified you're going to be electrocuted.
Exactly. I've just listened to the soundtrack of that and you try to get a visual. It's horrific. I mean, I wouldn't know what to expect from a taser. Obviously, it's not the, you know, the daily routine of anybody that were there to experience. But the poor guy, you know, it's you question then apprehend, and you certainly don't take out a lethal weapon like that unless, of course, you know, one is drawn against the officer. That wasn't the case at all. Completely over the top, egregious miscarriage of justice. And I certainly hope those officers were brought to justice and there was some. You know, some legal action meted out against them.
Well, let's hope so. But, the precedents and what we've seen in the past suggest that will not happen. There may be some disciplinary measures. And this has happened many times in the past, not always ending up in death. I'm having a little bit of a problem here with some noise in the background. I'm not quite sure where that
it's
is coming from.
This is live radio. It's okay, Erwin.
We've
been through this many times.
Something is ringing here, and I don't know where it's coming from. I'm terribly sorry about that. I'm going to try and locate the source of the sound.
That's fine. Take your time.
Terribly sorry to our listeners. I'm really apologize. I'm
those pesky telemarketers. They seem to do it all the time. At the least,
yes. In fact, it's never happened before. I'm actually in an apartment here, and there's a phone that is actually not connected, and it just suddenly started ringing. Terribly sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yes. I mean, just getting back into that question about the use of violence. What I've seen is that it's very similar. There are parallels to this which have occurred in the United States. And there's a story which I do actually have up here, and I've talked about it on this show before. And, of course, this is just one of thousands. But, again, the ones that come to the attention of the media are where the person concerned is important in some way, has wealthy parents, or in the case of this particular story, the father of the man who was tasered to death was himself a policeman, right? And this is the story of Kelly Thomas. And this has really strong parallels to the case in Sydney. And I've got an article here from the Daily Mail. Police beat and taser a mentally ill homeless man to death. A shocking video has been released allegedly showing police officers tasering and beating a homeless man to death who they claim was resisting arrest. And this is from 2011. Now, the parallels here are that Robert Lardizio was not mentally ill. He was actually, you know, in good shape, but he was taking some sort of drug. I think it may have been LSD, which put him into some kind of semi-psychotic state. Now, the case here of Kelly Thomas is that he had a long-term mental illness. He had schizophrenia, and the police had actually been harassing him over a period of several days. And the video was released, and I've watched the whole thing. It is one of the most horrific videos I have ever seen, because the police, in a predator-like way, taunt the man. And you can see the aggression and the murderous violence in the police as they close in on him. First, they're just talking to him, and they're standing there, and the policeman is twirling his baton in this kind of threatening way. And the man that is beaten to death in the end is completely peaceful. He doesn't resist the police. He doesn't engage in violence in any way. Right up until the point where they slam him to the ground. At that point, of course, he does start resisting, and, you know, he's trying to save his life. I mean, at that point, he's resisting because he's being brutally beaten. And the beating continues and continues and continues, and it goes on for several minutes. And, of course, there's that horrific photo which was posted on the internet of the man's face when he was brought to hospital, completely blue and black and blue, and he died about a day later in hospital. But what I find interesting, Chris, is that the same modus operandi is taking place, with the police acting in this kind of gang mentality and completely denying any kind of – completely failing to acknowledge any responsibility for what they've done. I mean, what do you make of this?
Well, number one, they shouldn't have left the police academy. Obviously, they've been ill-trained on many levels. First and foremost is just common decency in relation with another human being. The second is when you're given a lethal weapon, whether it be, you know, ballistic or electronic, like in this case, you have to know how to use it under a myriad of situations, both stressful and calm. And you never, ever unholster. And having shot firearms myself, you know, ever since I was 12 and in training and responsible training and hunting and so forth with friends and, you know, scoutmasters and so forth, the first and foremost thing is, do you actually need to use the weapon? And in this case, obviously not. You had alluded to this man was partially mentally impaired, if I'm not mistaken.
Kelly Thomas had a history of schizophrenia, but
But you erase all doubt, and as far as the mental parity or lack thereof of the victim before you even pull out a weapon. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Every one of these officers completely fell flat on their face in that respect. So it's just a complete breakdown of just common human decency and being able to, being responsible with the lethal weapon, and then their lack of training. This goes to the top. The people that are responsible for getting them graduated from or approving their graduation from their academy or the equivalent in Australia certainly just completely blew it right there. And so every one of them need to be brought up on charges.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, what we're seeing is a culture here that goes right back to the way the police are trained.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems then to encourage them to behave in a way that I don't know. There is something really dark and satanic about it. I just, you know, when I hear these stories and when I watch the video, particularly that one that of the homeless man that was beaten to death in Florida, there appears to be something really dark that has entered into human nature. And I guess it's always been there. I mean, I'm not saying it's something new, but there sure. seems to be something that maybe it is a phase that we are moving through now as a civilization. And again, it's not just one country. It's not just one place. It's in multiple places. But this darkness in people and this unwillingness to be truthful, to face reality and this need to engage in brutal, violent domination of people, that they get some grotesque, quite evil pleasure from, seems to have become is the signature of the current era.
It's coincidental that you bring that up here, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's exactly what we found out from a psychologist from the FBI here in Oklahoma City and other psychologists with local law enforcement when we were researching for the Oklahoma City case, and we can elaborate on that later. But sure. my point is that every human being, even from a child, up till just shortly before you pass away, has a tipping point. And the key is to, either in a good way or a bad way, you have to find out what that tipping point is, whether it be under the influence of alcohol or psychotropic drugs or the illusion of being under power or being in a gang and so forth. There are so many things that could trigger that. Not making any excuses, but pragmatically looking at it, these guys were, these meaning the police officers, were completely overboard on and just the trigger mechanism to get them to that tipping point to have total and utter disrespect for another human being. We don't know what they were under the influence of, but they shouldn't have been out there in the street if they were under any influence at all.
Chris, drugs, I think we're just about to head to break. Looks like we're just about going to break. I'm not getting the bumper music there, but I do believe we're going to break. Yeah. So we'll be right back after this break. Please stay with us. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
No matter where you go in your life, at some point, you're going to need somebody to stand by you. Oh, yeah. Oh, my darling. Stand by me. No matter who you are. No matter where you go in life. You gon' need somebody to stay.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herwood Fenton. It's great to be with you today. Today, my guest is Chris Emery, filmmaker and producer here at Logos Radio Studio. And we've just been talking about some stories that came up in the last hour there about human nature and the way people have a certain tipping point that they can become turned into something which is really quite quite demonic, and that even average people can actually become like this under certain circumstances. And of course, this is what we've seen with the police, and this is of course what we see in cases of major terrorist incidents, where you do have people engaging in horrific actions. And of course, Chris, you've done a lot of research into this whole field. Your first film, A Noble Lie, is about the Oklahoma City bombing. And you've looked into a lot of aspects of it and uncovered a lot of information that was completely hidden. And, of course, what you've discovered completely contradicts the official story of the Oklahoma bombing. But
that is correct.
Yeah, but you've also discovered certain things about Timothy McVeigh, and you certainly recognize, as I understand it, that Timothy McVeigh was no kind of Sunday school teacher.
No, that is correct. I remember vividly Wendy Painting, who did an absolutely brilliant job of helping us research the case, and she was one of our co-producers and executive researchers. She's from upstate New York, coincidentally was raised in a town less than an hour and a half drive from where Timothy McVeigh was raised, in outside of Rochester, New York. We were at, I can't name the location, obviously, but at an archive that had stored a lot of the defense counsel notes that Stephen Jones and 52 of his legal assistants and attorneys helped the research of the case and in the defense. Anyway, there was a several boxes with McVeigh's correspondence, both with the defense counsel and his attempted correspondence with the prosecution. And it was amazing. Wendy and I would go and look at the margin notes on a lot of this correspondence, whether it be legal documents, briefs, or just McVeigh's own personal handwriting. And just within a matter of about a 3-hour period, we're going through, I'd estimate probably 300 or 400 pages, and it goes from calm and content to like sociopath to profane back to calm. He had about 4 different personalities. I mean, it's quite obvious how, you know, the words he was using, his penmanship, the context of his conversation, and who he was trying to communicate to. And I looked at Winnie and I says, "This is absolutely bizarre." And she says, "Welcome to Tim McVeigh's world."
Wow.
And that's really brought it in crystal clear focus with how he was manipulated, and knowing his military background and the fact that he was on the payroll with the CIA at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing. Any of the listeners out there thinking we're grabbing for straws, folks, that's not even up for debate anymore. That's established by the military's own records and the records that we saw that the defense counsel had. They were simply not permitted to enter a lot of that information into court. And by the order of Judge Mace, and it was just amazing. A lot of this stuff was quashed. But to get back to your point,
yes,
it stems back to the police officers, whatever, if it's mental stress, steroids, the diet, whatever the case may be. It was just a perfect storm of a horrific storm of circumstances, and why they chose to met out their aggression and their violence on this gentleman. It was just really very unfortunate.
Yeah, look, again, you know, this whole trend, though, is something that seems to be getting worse. And I believe it's really important that shows like what we're doing today and what we're talking about today can start to reverse the trend. And I do believe the trend will be reversed over time. I believe that the better part of human nature will resurface, and eventually these horrendous things will occur less. But look, let's get a little bit into what you've been up to recently, Chris.
Okay.
You've been recently on a bit of a tour for the film Noble Lie. How's it been? You've had a few speaking engagements. How did that go?
Well, you know, now that you ask, as they say, we're going back to recall. We're rewinding the tape. We started our tour The first screening was in the second week of January of this year, and we've literally been on tour. My gosh, 12 different cities. It's been shown in 5 major theaters, 134 screenings throughout the U.S. and Canada. I've been on out of those 12 cities. I think I've been in 11 of them. Film festivals, we've been invited, officially selected in 9, given the Best Picture Feature Documentary Award in 3, with the finalist in the 4th. And I just got off the phone with the coordinator of the Clayton State University Film Fest just south of Atlanta this afternoon. Our film is up for an award this weekend, so there's a good chance we may come home with the 4th Best Picture award this weekend. I won't find that out actually until Tuesday. But to answer your question, it's been an absolutely wonderful and just an amazing opportunity to travel from coast to coast and to meet the people that are still interested in this project. It's very humbling. When Deborah can attest to this, our producer, she did a marvelous job, an absolutely superb job of doing the sound editing and so forth and cleaning up all of the sound levels. And I've seen the movie in several theaters, and their sound systems are very particular, especially on the digital edge now. And it was superb. Deb just did a great job. But my point is that we've met probably several hundred people, if not close to 3,000 or 4,000 people off and on through the film festivals and the screenings. And every one of them came up to us and said, thank you. And it's really, we've been very blessed, and we never, ever, ever expected this response. It's sold in 21 different countries, very well in Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, and the Philippines.
So
Norway, Sweden, it's amazing.
The DVD is available in Australia. How can people buy it?
Well, they order off the website, and we've had great success in getting it overseas in no more than 5 days. In fact, our DVDs arrived in Australia within 3 days. We're not quite sure how that happened, but consistently, we're getting emails from Melbourne, from Adelaide, from Sydney, from Perth in Western Australia, Brisbane. And they're saying, wow, we got this thing in 4 days. So anyway, we're very blessed, and we're getting response from Japan and radio show hosts from Sweden, Japan, the UK, yourself, and then the gentleman out of New Zealand. It's been a roller coaster ride, and it's been I'm speechless. Never in our wildest dreams would we have expected to get the response and the support that we have.
Yeah, no, that is really, really pleasing. And of course, you've had some speaking engagements. I believe you spoke at a university in Oklahoma City recently.
That was at Oklahoma State University. It's about a 90-mile drive north of here. Very beautiful campus. And there is a gentleman there that is a PhD candidate. He's actually a teacher on campus and very switched on, as you and I would say, very supportive of our effort. And we had 100 students show up. It's what they call a cineculture. It's a special cinema club that deals with a wide variety of issues in subject matter. And we actually had the mother of Terrence Yankee, who's featured in the movie for 8 minutes. He was the police officer that was brutally murdered a year and 3 weeks after the bombing. And of course, we can elaborate on the story in the film.
Sure.
But his mother showed up, her brother-in-law and sister-in-law. And much to our surprise, one of the students in attendance was actually 4 years old the day of the bombing, and she was one of the survivors from the Murrah building. And it was very humbling to hear her get up. She got a little teary-eyed, but she thanked us, myself being the spokesperson for the film crew, and thanked us for putting the movie together, because she never, since that day, ever got a straight answer what happened. And she came within an inch of her life. It's amazing. Consistently, we were running into people that had personal, either direct or indirect, connections to the bombing, and it was just outstanding to hear their stories. And we're very grateful the fact that they appreciated what we did.
That is really, really, really pleasing. Of course, speaking at a university there in Oklahoma City, you really are,
This was actually in Stillwater. It's about a 90-minute drive. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the University of Oklahoma is about 20 miles south of here.
Right.
They refused to have our film screened on campus.
Ah, really?
And that's a whole other story for another time. But the ironic thing is, our editor, Austin Green, graduated from OU Film School. And they're rebuffing us. They're saying, no, we don't want you to screen the film here. So, you know what? University of Wisconsin-Madison, major Division I engineering school. Yeah. I did the screening there on April 19th. I was there for the anniversary. I was on a four-state tour. And then the University of California, Berkeley, I was told by a professor that I saw at another screening in San Francisco in Oakland. She said, look, we had 400 some students give you a standing ovation on this at Berkeley.
That is incredible. We're just going to have to wind it up there. We're going to break. Chris, you'll be with us for the rest of the hour. So please stand by. Ladies and gentlemen, a great interview. We'll be right back after this short break.
She said she learned the hard way. Said she wanna spare the children. She said don't give a say your soul away, 'cause all that you have is your soul. So don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. 'Cause all that you have is your soul.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And it is a great pleasure to have your company today. If you'd like to join in our conversation, you're most welcome to give us a call on 512-646-1984. That's a US number, 512-646-1984. And if you're calling us in Australia, you can call us on 1-300-153-372. Would love to hear from you. And please do take a look at our website, www.truthnews.com.au. We've got podcasts going back to 2008 on there. I've done quite a lot of interviews, many, many different topics. And my way of covering subjects and my position on subjects is not driven by any kind of alliances or allegiances. Unfortunately, I am having some problems here today, ladies and gentlemen. I've got someone pressing the buzzer of my apartment. I'm terribly sorry. Chris, can you possibly just take over the show? I'm going to have to deal with this. I really do apologize.
Not a problem, Herewood. I know Herewood and I were talking on break about the political ramifications and why this case wasn't investigated properly by either the Bush administration or the Clinton administration. Well, of course, there was huge political fallout with the Clinton administration. He still has the temerity to show up in Oklahoma City to accept awards from the Oklahoma City National Memorial, including plaques and crystal trophy and a check for $5,000 back on the 15-year anniversary. And we know that some of his top lieutenants within his cabinet were very instrumental in helping cover up this case. So you have, I mean, that is the height of arrogance and the height of disrespect. You talk about slapping the victim's family members and survivors in the face. To have a president show up and take the credit for an investigation on this case when it was completely upside down. Anyway, and then you switch to the parties and go to the Republican Party. George Bush and John Ashcroft had no interest in investigating this case. They wanted to sweep it under the rug, turn off the light, shut the door, and walk away. Well, our film crew refused over the last 17 years, collectively, the people that helped us research, myself for the last 12 years. Deborah, our producer on this network, helped out for how many years? Her and her husband, Jerry. Several people on the staff with Alex Jones. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's probably, I would say, close to 75 people that really helped us get to where we are today. So, I'm one of the spokesperson for the film crew, but I'm certainly not going to take the credit for everything. That would be completely irresponsible for me to do so, and I'm just not like that for anybody who knows who I am.
Thanks so much, Chris. You know, I really do appreciate that, and I do apologize for the interruptions in today's show.
It's okay.
I'm actually, just for our listeners, I'm broadcasting from Thailand, and I'm in an apartment here, and normally very quiet, but they actually want to change the lock on my door, and they've been calling me on the phone and buzzing my apartment because they want to change the lock on my door. So that's what's going on here. Chris, let's just can we move on to some of your more recent projects? I would love to talk a little bit about the next film project, and the general subject area is that of the MK Ultra CIA mind control techniques, programs, experiments. I don't know how you describe it, but of course there's a lot of information about this on the internet, on websites, Wikipedia. It's all out there, but there is so much we don't know about it. And what I think is really, really interesting is you've actually decided to make a film. You've made some progress with it, and of course the success of your first film has helped you get the funding to be able to do this film. Can you give us a general overview of what the film is going to be bringing to us, and what general sort of information you'll be able to impart?
No problem. Thank you for asking. The title of the working title for the new movie is A State of Mind, The Psychology of Control, and we are going to address pretty much from cradle to grave how the human being is influenced either by media, education, psychotropic drugs, the indoctrination of religion, and so forth. We're not going to get into the minute detail of religious doctrine or anything, but it'll be a part of an overview of how, at least in U.S. society, and a lot of it carries over to, first and second world countries, how the human being is shaped and coerced into thinking certain ways. And it's really quite an eye-opening experience. Like I mentioned earlier in our interview, I was able to peek in, at least briefly, into part of the mind, or the window into the mind of Timothy McVeigh. This movie is taking that to a completely different level. And we're going to be studying MKUltra. That'll be one of the aspects. But more of the psychology of advertising, going into private school, how they influence you, and how you're basically coerced into what they call learned helplessness. And a classic example of that was yesterday. I'm not ashamed to say I didn't vote, because for the last 11 years, I've learned that it's pretty much an effort in futility. And it was learned helplessness. You're going through the motions, for instance, just on the voting situation. But the results are already determined long before the election day comes up.
Yeah.
And yesterday was just a complete shotgun of arrogance. The fact that the physical results weren't even counted, both on electronic as well as the paper ballots. And Alex had a guest on today with there's a gal out of Austin that the name slips my mind, but she's an expert on this. When you call in the election and the results aren't even in, that's like, my God, we're talking about a national election here. This isn't a city council or a county constable election. This is a national election that influenced the rest of the world for the next 4 years, if not many years to come. And people just sit down on their thumbs and they accept that. We're going to go ahead and delve into why a lot of people, the general public, think that's a perfectly fine thing to do. And this movie's going to dissect it, basically present it in a professional manner. We've interviewed experts, and it's going to be done in a very objective way. And it's actually going to complement the intelligence of the viewer versus insulting their intelligence. So we're very excited about the opportunity to put it out.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I noticed I was watching some live coverage there of the U.S. elections earlier on in the day, and I noticed that they had decided that Obama was going to win, and I could simply tell by some of the nuances of the way they described each candidate that it had been decided that he would win, and I believe that these ideas are put into people on a subconscious level leading up to an election. And we see the same thing happening in Australia, by the way. I believe these techniques are quite well developed, and people's decision making is subconsciously influenced. Now, when you looked into this CIA MK Ultra, did you realize that you would end up sort of looking at such global, you know, mainstream sort of issues as like how an election is won, because a lot of people tend to associate MKUltra with some very secretive program that was producing mind-controlled assassins, that was controlling individual people on an individual level.
By the way, that is real. That's not fake. That's not hearsay or conjecture. That is bona fide. That is one of the many techniques and the end results that they use that for. So,
is that right? Is that right?
Go ahead.
Yeah. And so, well, I'm very interested in that. I mean, did your research was it able to confirm, for instance, one of the most celebrated cases was the assassination of Robert Kennedy, where the assassin Sirhan Sirhan himself acknowledged that he couldn't even remember what he did, and he seemed to be in some kind of trance-like state. Does your film get into that topic at all?
Yes, it does, and I'm not at liberty to say how far we are going to, you know, get into it, but I know it's going to be covered at great length. And I'm under confidentiality clause. There are certain aspects of the movie that I'm not at liberty to discuss. But what I can say is that this is not going to be for lack of a better term, and it's thrown at us in a pejorative sense, a conspiracy theory movie. This is based on fact. These are based on documents that are in the archives that are circulating in think tanks to this day. And we go back to even the late 1800s. To see how the think tanks in Europe actually try to cultivate in the United States, and it goes on not only psychological but on a chemical level, how your body, your physiology reacts to certain psychotropic drugs, and on an economic level, there are a lot of things that come to a nexus point to determine how you are going to behave, literally from cradle to grave, and you are sheep, you're cattle, you're part of the Grand Master Plan, and you are not invited to the party. You're not the one moving the chess pieces around the board. There is a select group of people that are, and we're going to go ahead and elaborate and show you who those people are and hopefully empower you with the knowledge and some sense of responsibility to take charge of your actions. This is absolutely amazing. And yesterday, I said, was a classic example. I'm just seeing this unfold on the internet and listening to it on the radio, and it's like, you know what? I'm not surprised more than I'm disappointed that there are millions, hundreds of millions of people that went out and voted, and it meant absolutely nothing to the rulers. They already had this already planned out. It's tragic and it's shocking all on the same level.
And so I guess what you're saying here is that the techniques of this mind control have really been extended to a complete mass mind control technique.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And it was done in piecemeal. In fact, it even started back in the late 1600s. I mean, just because technology didn't exist back then didn't mean that they didn't attempt to do it, and even if not earlier, but at least we were able to get documents that span back that far, more so and more concrete and more peer-reviewed in the late 1800s.
We're just about to go to break. Yeah, Chris, sorry to interject there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after these brief messages.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the...
Welcome back, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. My guest today is Chris Emery, who has been talking about his film work, The Noble Lie, which is the film that's currently screening around the US, and which you can buy online. Actually, I might just get the URL for you quickly, Chris, so that people can just hop on the website and, and order the DVD.
It's www.anoblelie.com. We have 4 of the 9 laurel leaves actually mounted on the website. We weren't able to fit the other ones on, and I'm not saying that in an arrogant sense. It's just on a functionality basis, our webmaster's like, what do we do with all of these? there are film crews, I guess, that wish they had that problem, but no, that we mounted the three best of and then the finalist. And like I said, there may be an opportunity to put the fourth on there, the best picture. But our Facebook page, you just under Facebook, put A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995, and it'll bring it up. And we've got, what's really neat about the Facebook page is that we're able to chronicle our travels and our screenings and different correspondence in the awards and just the interaction with the public on that page. And you'll see kind of a chronologic development ever since we started in January. So it's really, we were very, very blessed and very fortunate to be able to put that together. And that'll give you a better window into, you know, what we've been through over the last 11 months. And then, of course, we have one for A State of Mind, The Psychology of Patrol. There are developments on there, too. And I'm very, very pleased to say that we've been brought on by an excellent film distributor out of Beverly Hills, Flirty Ron. Films. James Lane, the director of the movie, and myself flew out to the American Film Market in Santa Monica this past week. And we were out there from this past Wednesday through Saturday, and 4 days of the 8-day film festival. And it was just absolutely eye-opening experience to see. This is where the distributors and the movie makers and the brokers get together. It's not a film fest per se.
Right.
It's actually the trade show version, but with filmmakers. And it was just wonderful to have that experience, worth tens of thousands of dollars just to be there and see how things get done on a very professional level. We're talking all the way on the entire North American continent, and even from Mexico. Central America were there. So 8,000 of the people that call the shots in the film industry were there.
You're operating on a new level when you can actually get access to those type of people.
Absolutely. It's just a completely different a realm of understanding the industry.
And, you know, there haven't been very many, for the want of a better word, conspiracy films that have reached that level. I think Loose Change did, you know, the final version of Loose Change. But see, your film really stands out from, and I've watched a lot of documentaries and a lot of great documentaries I've seen, but you, in terms of exposing false flag terrorism and some of these really difficult, challenging questions about our society, your film really stands out head and shoulders above most other films that I've seen because of its professionalism. And of course...
Well, thank you, Harewood. And like I said, a lot of that stems from Deborah's work and our entire crew. We had a core team of about 15 people that just made this thing. We got it over the goal line. You know, we refused to stop until it was done.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting to see what happens when you can attain that level, that the sheer quality of that drives it through. There is some, in some sense, people can't deny when information is presented well, accurately, and with a good intention and a good heart behind it. Mm-hmm. It will have an impact, and I believe this is really important because so many people today, including many listeners to the show, many people who I speak to on Facebook, feel completely despondent and completely negative, and I would say almost to the point of paralysis. That they feel that there is nothing that they can do to shape the world. They feel that they are powerless. They feel that they are not actors that have any significance whatsoever on the world stage. And I've had many people tell me this. They say there's no point. I've had many people tell me there is no point in taking any action of any kind, no point in doing anything. We are simply in the grip of Illuminist puppet masters who control everything, and it's a self-fulfilling state of mind when you think that way. What's your take on that?
I tactfully beg to differ, and we are proof positive of what happens. Your show, what you're doing right now here, with broadcasting from halfway around the world, the Logos Radio Network that's carrying the show, and everybody behind the scenes, and I've been very blessed to be part of it, either directly or indirectly, over the last... Well, what, since 2008? So we're looking at 4 years. For anybody that thinks that way, I beg to differ. And I says, you know what? Do a 180 on your mental grasp of what's going on, because you never underestimate the power of one. And what we've gone through just as a film crew, whether it be financially, physically, mentally, we forged ahead, and it came back to us in spades. James and I were having dinner you know, not to drop names or locations, sure, but we're having dinner in Beverly Hills, and we're looking at each other, This is a beautiful restaurant right on off of Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
I'm looking up at palm trees that are literally 70 feet in the air. I counted the stories in the building across the street, and I looked at him and he says, how the hell did we get here? You know, and more on a professional sense. And he says, we went for the truth.
Yeah.
We refused to give up. And I'm not saying everybody's going to arrive in Beverly Hills, but, you know, the whole thing is, it's like, never underestimate the good that you have in you and the ability to get the truth out, whatever it may be, whether it be on a local or you know, regional or national level. Just go for the local level. I mean, be surprised how much progress you're going to make, because there's so many people out there, like you said, that just don't give a rip. And you are going to make a difference. And just stick with it. And like I said, we're proof positive of that.
And of course, you talked a little earlier, and this is something that subject that I'm continually coming back to. You talked a little earlier about this learned helplessness that sure. people have. And this is actually a subject of your film as well, that you're actually looking at how people have been turned into a state where they basically have learned to be powerless. And I believe that is actually... That's why your film, your second film that you're working on, is so important, because this is the biggest problem that we face now. Even with people who are supposedly awake, you can be awake, but you can still be subconsciously affected by the memes and the mind control techniques. Because many people are aware of the deceptions about issues such as 9/11 and vaccines and fluoride and many, many, many things. But they still don't feel they can take any steps to remedy the situation. But then again, this is part of the state of being under some form of mind control. What do you have to say to that?
Where do you even begin, you know, yeah. to pin that down? But you hit it on the nail on the head. Let me pull back a second here. The Republican National Convention, a lot of folks here in the U.S. are very familiar with that complete horrific debacle, and the fact that they shut out Ron Paul and Kennedy Johnson wasn't able to speak there. And then, you know, not only was there every imaginable miscarriage of the Robert's Rules of Law and the whole bit and of order, and they just completely ignored their own rules. It's like they didn't exist. And then the next day, all of the candidates and the functionaries from that, basically Romney and Ryan and all their functionaries, are in the front page and on the headline news on television saying, you know what, take us seriously. We're going to be your next candidate. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You just completely broke your own rules and you want us to take you seriously? How dumb do you think we are?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you really have to take stock of, your own level of intelligence and what you're willing to accept and what you're willing to say. You know what? I'm not going to take this crap anymore. I'm worth more than that. This is not as good as it gets. And I hope I, you know, brought the point across, but my God, people, when are you going to put your foot down and draw the line in the sand and say, I'm a human being, I've got a level of decency, and you're not going to embarrass my intelligence or insult my intelligence. I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah, and people at all levels have to step up. You know, people in the position of legislation, the people in congressmen, senators, people in business at a certain level, instead of just bowing down and saying, this is what we're going to do because that's what everyone else is doing,
exactly.
They have to say, no, we're going to stand on principle here. And, you know, I'm thinking about that famous moment back in 2008 when Congress was essentially threatened by I think it was Ben Bernanke and the bankers, and they said, if you do not pass this legislation for the bailout, you know, there's going to be martial law within a week. And, you know, there were probably some decent people in there who thought it was the wrong thing. I mean, some of them did speak up about it, but then they all just caved in, didn't they?
It's like, you know, trying to take a threat from the Gambino and the Bonanno crime families. I mean, that's literally what the Republican and the Democratic parties are. It's two crime families coming together and agreeing not to have a punch-up or a shootout between each other. And there's really no difference. They just have a different name. And, you know, my analogy and the direct explanation of Romney and Ryan, well, you go to Biden and Obama, and he's there saying, give me another 4 years. All right. How much worse can you're driving our country over the cliff as it is. How much worse can it get? I don't even want to even think what it's going to be like 4 years from now. So you know what? I'm going to take action. I'm going to go ahead and and work on a local level. We're going to take our counties and our cities and our states back. And that's more on the political end. But, you know, to answer your question about the movie, at least we're going to empower people, at least with some basic tools, to take stock of what they have, you know, both on an emotional and intelligence level, and saying, how can I better my world, if not for, you know, not the whole nation, but my family and our community here? Because that's where it starts. You've got to get the bedrock back. And once you have that, then you're going to be able to go ahead and take this country back. Otherwise, it's going to crumble in your feet. So our movie hopefully will at least, like I said, help give the people the tools to think at least in a clear and in a much more responsible and focused fashion.
Yeah, and I'm sure that that will happen. I'm sure that with each step that we move in this direction, things change. And of course, you don't always see the change right away, but there is a tipping point. And we were talking about tipping points before, but there is also a tipping point in terms of social change, in terms of the way in which society organizes itself and deals with problems. And there is a tendency to deny and ignore. But then when a certain momentum builds, it will flip over. I mean, you know, we saw the civil rights movement of the 1960s finally did bring some changes. Of course, it wasn't enough, but those changes were positive, and it did happen. A lot of people would have said, well, that could never happen. You know, black people will never be able to go to university with white people. Black people will never be able to sit on a bus with white people. Well, it did happen, right?
So exactly. And, you know, 2 years ago, Harold, you and I were talking about getting the show. In fact, this week.
Actually, I think we're just at the end of the hour. I'm so sorry, Chris. We've just run out of time. We are finishing up for the week. We'll be back next week. See you then.